It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But DeKrell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 2.7.
In which we test out the benefits of the Gorian lifestyle, only in reverse. I wear the pants.
It's not fair. I like pants.
No, you don't.
No, I don't like jeans. I like pants. The difference. You can wear the jeans, I'll wear the other pants. How about that?
That's acceptable.
All right. Well, today we're going to talk about the thing that hit the airwaves and made everybody upset, which is the bankrupt nihilism of our fallen fantasists by Leo Grin over at Big Hollywood, which I'm not sounding very enthusiastic about this, but...
That's because it's a really annoying subject?
It's a ridiculous argument, and lots of people have already talked about it, but I guess we're going to talk about this in a more general sense, talking about... This isn't just about fantasy. I mean, he can make... I've seen similar arguments about science fiction, and he could make this argument that, you know, there's all of this changing the way morality is dealt with. There's all this challenging of whatever traditional... That term doesn't even make any sense, but, you know, whatever traditional things that he believes in.
Right. It's kind of interesting because the articles that you sent me for our discussion topic today actually kind of go in two opposite directions. This guy's kind of arguing that fantasy has become more liberal because it's nihilistic. And the other people are arguing that science fiction might be getting more conservative.
Right. Right.
So at some point, when are they just going to like meet in the middle and you'll just have this moderate?
I think there's a lot more moderate stuff, and I think he's kind of ridiculous, like that he thinks that somehow there aren't these like traditional adventure fantasy stuff anymore, because there's so much of it.
I think most of what is out there is high fantasy.
Of course. I mean, it's not everybody writes like Joe Abercrombie. He references Joe Abercrombie and says that he's like the downfall of Western civilization, basically, because Abercrombie apparently like uses poop jokes and like that's his.
To me, sounds kind of awesome, but
that's the '80s.
Right.
The '80s. Like, I mean, he'd have to go back and say the '80s were the downfall of modern society, because that's like one giant poop and joke. So
the '80s were one giant poop and joke.
Have you watched '80s comedies?
Oh, I suppose. one could argue that 90s and 2000s also have a lot of poop and jokes. Why? Because they're universal and timeless. But, no, I mean, really, though, he's arguing that, okay, the stuff, the high fantasy, a la, you know, Tolkien and, bizarrely, Conan with Robert E. Howard.
Right.
Is somehow this thing apart and better than... this sort of nihilistic take on modern fantasy in which, you know, it's very bitter and you have a lot of blood and guts and gore and everybody's out for themselves and whatnot.
Right.
I would in some senses argue that modern fantasy is more conservative than traditional fantasy, epic fantasy in that sense, because it's, you know, single man for himself, except that you can't even really argue that, because Conan is the most, like, nihilistic, pointless, out-for-himself hero that one can even cite.
And he doesn't get it. He doesn't get that he's totally contradicted himself in his examples.
Right. right. He's like, he's pointing out all these authors and all these books that are called gritty, violent, morally ambiguous, and darkly funny. Well, I don't think Conan was ever funny, but, and never really that intelligent either. But anyway, and then dark and shot through with black humor. Apparently, if it has humor, that's, I think, what makes it bad. So now I'm kind of getting that, is that anything that's funny and looks at these things kind of with a biting cynicism. Biting cynicism. I think that's what's bad, because Conan is gritty, violent, and morally ambiguous.
But it's serious.
Sexist pig.
Right.
Who murders people kind of without any sort of repercussions, for one thing, or any real goal.
Okay.
So how is that different from these new novels? Except in these new novels, there's humor in it, and they're actually kind of deconstructing that whole gritty, violent, morally ambiguous thing, because they're not necessarily saying it's a good thing, whereas Conan kind of glorified it.
Right. Well, and I think what you said off podcast was hilarious, because he does cite Conan, who, I mean, I've not read the books, but I've seen the movie, and you can get a general idea of what Conan is about from the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is that, you know, he is this big muscular man. He goes and he fights the bad guys. He kills the bad guys. He's indiscriminate. The good and evil is fairly sort of spelled out, except that Conan is like this odd in-betweenish figure. And then he gets the girl and objectifies her because she wears skimping clothing. And it's just so, I don't know, like, I guess for me, like, his whole argument seems to fall apart on that whole... I don't know. I'm getting confused.
It falls apart the second he cites Howard
Conan.
This, you know, great epic mythology that is somehow the thing worth reading, and that modern books that do exactly the same thing, but with funniness, are bad.
I think his problem is, like, he seems
Sorry, real quick. And that modern fantasy, which occasionally actually treats women with respect, I think this is what you're leading towards. Modern fantasy actually treats women with some respect. You have very independent women, kind of. And if I remember correctly, the only women that had any power in Conan, I mean, like, I haven't read it either, but this is my understanding from just kind of the biography and whatnot. Anyway, is that the only women who had power were the bad guys.
Right, so women are either to be
objectified,
consumed,
or destroyed. Yes.
So, right. So, I mean, but I guess, like, his overall argument, because he doesn't seem to, like, that, he doesn't get that. And I don't think he's read Conan in, like, since he was born. Well, because clearly he has no idea what's in Conan. Like, he is completely oblivious. He's mostly right, I think, with Tolkien, but he's completely off base with Conan.
Yes.
But what seems to be his problem with modern fantasy, it's that he doesn't like the realism. He seems to want to live in delusional world. He refers to mythology number of times about this, like, mythopoeic, that somehow Tolkien was engaging in this grand mythopoeic gesture of these grand sort of fairy tales of the old world and yada yada, and that's what he really wants in his fantasy. And so he doesn't like realism in fantasy. He doesn't like fantasy that says, I am in a medieval setting, and so I'm actually going to take that seriously. So he would hate something like a Game of Thrones, which I don't much care for the Game of Thrones, or at least I tried to read it and I couldn't get into it. But that is a story that takes its medieval setting extremely seriously.
Realistically.
Realistically.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that is what he's arguing against, is a realistic viewpoint of what actually would be occurring in a world in which you had kings and queens, and then therefore abject poverty and, you know, other things like that. Any world that wants to base itself on this sort of utopian outlook of medieval times, which is generally what high fantasy does, is totally unrealistic, and that's what he wants.
Right, and the thing is his whole opinion is based on that particular point, the mythology. He's basing it on a mythology that doesn't actually exist.
Right.
It's a mythologized mythology. And that's, like, really crazy Derridian double speak. because the mythology he wants A, it doesn't exist, as I've already, as I just said. It doesn't exist, and in fact is so willfully ignorant of the reality from which it springs that to say that this world that he wants to see in fantasy as if that's somehow part of this grand mythology that always existed. Well, no. I mean, the reality is, as you've said, I hate to go back to this, but poop and jokes are timeless, right?
Totally timeless.
But they have been around.
I'm pretty sure we've always had them.
Yes, they have. They've been around since even early British poets. I mean, they've been slightly altered, but sex jokes have been around. Vulgar, awful sex jokes. Read the Earl of Rochester. Read his stuff. He uses the C word, the C word to refer to women.
I know.
He uses that word liberally. Now, granted, that word didn't mean then what it means now. It's not as vulgar then as it is now, but he says the F word. I'm sure he says the S word. It's been a while since I've read him. But the point is like all of that all existed even then. You know, the time at which he's claiming this mythology sprung from or that it's taking its roots from, it doesn't actually exist. It seems like his overall argument isn't that he has a problem with modern fantasy because it's challenging traditional notions or anything. He's upset with it because it makes it impossible for him to live in his delusional fantasy.
Right.
And not an escapist fantasy.
He specifically calls it out for being liberal.
Which is odd, but whatever.
I mean, he has this whole thing about it's no different from the crucifix issue that was calling out the AIDS art piece.
Does he make that in his article?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Soiling the building blocks and well-known tropes of our treasured modern myths, this is a quote, is no different than other artists taking a crucifix and dipping it in urine, covering it in ants, or smearing it with feces.
Oh, got it. I didn't get the reference.
It's another small, pathetic chapter in the decades-long slide of Western civilization into suicidal self-loathing, which I would totally disagree with, obviously. It's a well-worn road. Bored middle-class creatives, almost all of them college-educated liberals,
not true,
living devout lives devoid of any greater purpose, inevitably reach out for anything deemed sacred by the conservatives populating any artistic field.
And he seems to think like that these people who are these artistic folks who challenge all of this, that somehow their goal is that all of them, they're just trying to get the conservatives. We're just after the conservatives. That's all we're doing. We're evil. We're like liberal Karl Rove, like sitting around in capes and like,
Well, no, I mean, he doesn't even grant liberals even that level. He calls them punk kids farting in class.
Yes, getting some giggles from the other mouth breathers, which is the most ridiculous reference. Mouth breathers is a stupid term because we all are mouth breathers. We breathe out of our mouths.
Yeah.
I get that it's supposed to be insulting, but like when you take it literally, it's just it's stupid.
It's very stupid. But yeah. Regardless, I mean, he's really we're defiling the splendor of true artists like Tolkien and Howard. And I'm going, okay, I'll grant you Howard was, I mean, particularly if you watch for his time, particularly he was brilliant. He was twisted and had major issues, but he was fairly brilliant.
For the time.
But there was nothing. I saw no splendor. I still see no splendor in Howard, personally. I really don't. I will agree with the Tolkien reference, but I don't think that deconstructing that is somehow a fart joke. It occasionally is. I'll totally agree with that. I mean, like the whole... I'm trying to think of the series, the Tekla and the one about it's the assassin anyway, it's an assassin in this weird alien world. He's human and everybody else are not. But anyway, there's a lot of fart jokes and profanity and cynicism and everything. And they're fairly for fun. I'm sure if I did a more careful read of the books though, I would find probably a lot of really critical assessments of a stratified society, for one thing, because it's a class system and humans are crap in it. But anyway, you can make a more careful read, but they're funny books, but they're supposed to be funny. That's their whole point. And they're supposed, they do revel in deconstructing the whole myth, the grand myth. But is that really such a bad thing?
I don't think it is.
Does it mean that somehow there's less
See, the thing
good
I think is he presents a false dichotomy.
Exactly.
He thinks that somehow only, well, I'm just going to say Tolkien because, again, he's wrong with the Conan. He's just an idiot with the Conan. But, you know, he thinks that Tolkien, like, that is the high form, that everything should aspire to that, and that's all that art should be. Or it seems to be that's the implied notion. But, like, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with either form. They have purposes. It's art. Even when it's for entertainment, it's still art, right? So it serves a purpose, even if it's deconstructing or if it's just playing into the hands of the old myths. They both serve a function, right? So I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with deconstructing. I think that's actually very useful. And to say that it's somehow an anti-conservative position, that's complete baloney. I mean, to say that any critique of slavery is somehow an anti-conservative position would be to be so willfully ignorant of reality. A lot of what we would consider liberals at that time were slave owners and wanted to keep slaves. They were against the granting of voting rights. They were against the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, all of this stuff. So to say, you know, so that I just think that he takes this. Well, I mean, he's from Big Hollywood, which is this massive conservative think tank. Well, it's not even a think tank. It's just mostly they just piss on movies. But
massive blog.
Right. I mean, they just piss on movies and try to find anti-conservative things in everything and claim that liberals are consuming the universe. But
well, yeah.
But he just,
probably anti-Semitic too, just saying.
Well, let's not go that far. But just, it just seems like he gets to this point where he's taken all of this as some sort of personal affront, and it's like,
oh, right.
I don't think that politically fantasy or even science fiction is always biased against conservatives as a group per se. So much is about policies which sometimes are adopted by conservatives, but are also sometimes adopted by liberals. So, I mean, I guess maybe now it seems like when we are deconstructing colonialism, I mean, that plays a huge role, imperialism, colonialism, and how capitalism is a part of that. And then that gets associated with conservatives, but I think somewhat unfairly because, I mean, let's face it, Democrats are also fairly strong capitalists. They just happen to believe more in regulation. Like, right. am I just off base, or is it? I don't know.
I don't think you're off base. But.
Okay, because I just think that maybe his. Well, I mean, obviously his bias is bleeding through so strongly that he's not able to think clearly about the subject he's attempting to present.
Right, and you know, to be honest, I have never actually done a critical read of Tolkien, but I have a feeling you're not going to really find that much conservative about it. I could be
wrong. Not in a positive,
exactly.
I mean, if you think about Tolkien, you think about Lord of the Rings, you think about it, it's most basic, it is literally a narrative about white people against brown people, and the brown people are the ones that get exterminated.
Right.
Think about that.
So in that sense, yes, it might be conservative, because
I don't think that's
I don't. I don't think, I honestly don't, I don't see it as a white versus dark. I do see it as coming from Tolkien's own experiences in World War One, personally, just this faceless horde that he sees being led by, you know, a all-powerful sort of thing. But I think you need to be even more careful with Tolkien than that. I have a feeling that he was just arguing against.
I know that, but at the point in which he is writing, was still in the height of even British colonialism. It was at the height of U.S. imperialism.
Right.
It was at the height of a war which was being waged with racial policies instituted, particularly against the Japanese. It was still at a point in which Africans and African descended people were being grossly mistreated. There was genocide being committed. This was at a period in history when that is inseparable from the literature. He was undoubtedly influenced by that. He may have disagreed with it, but that still doesn't stop the fact that in his narrative that shows up.
Yeah.
So.
Oh no, I totally agree. I think, you know, you can't help but include things that are contemporary to you. But what I'm saying is, you know, it's the question is how much of it was a criticism of that, though, and how much of it was caving to it.
I don't think he was criticizing or caving. I think he was just presenting
presenting
a narrative that happens to have maybe adopted certain views of the time that he may not have intended there to be, but that's the way it is. Oh, go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because going back to the original point, I don't think that's necessarily conservative or necessarily to talk about that or to critique that, to say write your own Lord of the Rings in which you criticize the genocidal practices of what essentially are white people. I don't think that's necessarily a liberal position to take against conservatives. No, I don't see that, particularly because racism is not blind. That your political position is not blind to racism. Just because liberals present themselves as generally being against racism and conservatives tend to get painted as though they are for racism.
Well, except that conservative arguments largely choose to ignore the
racial implications. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree. That the policies tend to ignore them, but that whether or not we could say that they are explicitly attempting to be racist.
No. I would never, ever, ever make that argument.
I mean, some of them are, but that's...
Right, exactly. But I do feel that, I mean, you see it a lot, that Democrats are called racist specifically because they call out the racial implications of certain scenarios and certain policies and and certain viewpoints. You know, it's a very common conservative mantra to call liberals out for being racist because they vice versa, because they say, look, the whole fact that you're bringing this up as an issue means that you're bringing race into the equation, therefore you are racist, which is BS, but it is the conservative mantra. So
but again, to go back to the old form of writing a fantasy novel, which of course is set in a medieval setting, which critiques these notions of race and the morality of racism and genocide and all of that, that critiques that is not necessarily a critique of a conservative position.
No, that's true. It's a critique,
especially within history.
Right. It is a critique of the practice, but not, you're right. I mean, it's like, but see, I totally disagree that, I think the basic problem with this blog post by Leo Grin is that it ignores the fact that there is some amazingly good high fantasy out there that does, I don't think it has mythopoeic splendor, though, and I think that's what it comes down to. To me, mythopoeic essentially means myopic, but and I don't think that there is any myopic fantasy out there, but I don't think you need to be myopic to have splendor.
Sure. That kind of goes, I mean, if we're going to throw in science fiction into this, I mean, you don't necessarily need those grand adventures of the Golden Age to necessarily have that sense of wonder.
Oh, not in the slightest. Right? I totally agreed. I mean, although...
I mean, I guess technically you would say that you would need those, but only because so much of what we consider to be that great sense of wonder sci-fi happens to be of that form.
Right.
I mean, you think like Star Wars. I mean, let's face it. Whether Star Wars is science fiction, I don't really give a shit, whatever. But the basic idea of Star Wars is that, you know, this is grand mythical adventure. It is the Tolkien of science fiction, basically.
Right.
Right? And it is. But it's also, there's ambiguity in that, though.
Yeah. I mean,
there is some ambiguity. It's just
a
not
huge
brought
amount
as...
of ambiguity, especially if you consider the newer ones. But the newer ones are just building upon the ambiguity of the older ones.
Sure.
So I mean, with the whole dark versus light, and you push people towards the dark if you allow them freedoms, and which is a weird, very deep concept.
Sure.
That I happen to completely agree with. You know, if you're gonna make black and white lines, you know, so there is a huge critique of this whole mythopoeic, myopic sort of vision.
Right, but it's also buried. Its narrative presents itself as that high adventure, and it gives you the opportunity to think deeper about what's going on underneath.
Exactly.
You can do that, or you can just watch it and be like, "What's up?" and like you just have your fun time.
Right, and he probably doesn't see any of that in Star Wars, to be honest.
Well, no, I mean, I would imagine that Star Wars would fit within his
mythopoeic sort of
idea. I would think so.
Even though it is mythopoeic without being myopic, I would argue.
Sure, and there's even ambiguity in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, you think about characters. I mean, it's been a while since I read the book, so I'm going to base it on the movie. I'm sorry, but I just don't feel comfortable talking about the book with any seriousness. But, like, for example, the Steward of Gondor.
Oh,
right?
You know?
He, on the one, I mean, there's a huge ambiguity with that. I mean, on the one hand, he fears that he's going to lose his power.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also worried about his country. And there's, you know, I mean, yes, we would say that he's maybe the bad guy, or a bad guy, just because maybe he's gone over the edge, but you have to understand why he went over to the edge. And then you get, like, the, what's the guy, the creepy guy that used to work for Sauron, that dies? Greva? Whatever. The creepy guy that in Rohan, right? Who's manipulated the
camp. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's even some ambiguity there. Yes, is he evil? Absolutely. But then you realize, why has he become evil? Well, he's been manipulated himself.
Right.
He's been seriously manipulated by Sauron.
Right.
You know? So you start to feel a little bit sorry for him. I mean, granted, he's still a douche, but... So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe he... just doesn't know how to read between the lines. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, I suppose he's arguing that, you know, although I don't think he actually makes the case at all, because I suppose you could make the argument, he doesn't, that's what I'm saying. You could make the argument, and this guy totally fails to do so, that it is not necessarily to deconstruct a trope or, the high fantasy in order to be critical of anything.
Yeah, he's not making that argument.
But he's not making that argument. And one could make that argument that you don't necessarily need to do that. And in some senses, you know, some of these people probably are kind of punk kids for doing it because it's funny. But A, I don't think that's bad. But B, it is possible to not have profanity and scat jokes and whatever and still be deconstructive.
Absolutely. Sure. But he's not making that argument. You're giving him too much credit by implying.
That's what I'm saying. He is not making the argument. I am making the argument. I'm presenting it as a new argument that modern fantasists, some of them, but not all of them, not by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, just look at Celine Kiernan's. There, in my opinion, she is kind of high fantasy. David Gemmel, very high fantasy, but still critical of a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem is he just doesn't like books.
I think so too.
Because when you get right down to it, if you even go through the examples he provides, his whole argument falls apart. So his problem is he just doesn't like to read.
I think that's what it is. I think at some point in his life he actually grew up, but he realized that he wanted to keep reading fluff.
So give him picture books.
Right?
That's what everyone should do. For his birthday, just give him picture books, because those are completely...
Picture books to Big Hollywood, so that they can be passed on to Leo Grin, because that's all Leo Grin is capable of understanding.
Yes. Make sure to send Tuza Tango. Okay. Well, we're running a bit long. We may come back to the other stuff then. We'll link to it, but we may come back to it.
We'll have another discussion on the other half of this equation, which is that is science fiction getting more conservative?
Sure. Yeah, we should do that. But anyway, so we need to go to reading or writing, so we don't run too long. And we'll definitely come back to this. So we're going to go over reading or writing, and we'll be right back. All right, and we're back with our reading and writing section. We should be pretty brief with this. So what are you reading, Jen?
Too much to say. No, I'm kidding. I am reading Lev Grossman's, I think that was his name, The Magician. Very good. I am reading Kazuo Ishiguro's Never Let Me Go. I'm still reading. I'm reading 5 books at once, so it's kind of difficult to actually finish anything. I am reading Paolo Bacigalupi's Wind Up Girl. And I just finished Mieville's Unlondon. Well, that was fun.
Woo!
Although I have to say, I don't think it's as good as the Maybird series or Neverwhere, interestingly enough.
Hmm.
I think was doing similar things to both, but not quite as successfully. I enjoyed it, but I really liked the Maybird series for young adults. So everybody go look it up and read them. They're good. Am I reading anything else? I think that's all I can think of right now. That's what I'm reading.
Alrighty. Well, I am reading Archaeology of the Future by Frederick Jameson, which is fun. Life Between Two Deaths by Philip Wegner. I'm reading some of that. That's the chair for my master's thesis. Mm. Yeah, I'm reading Moxieland by Lauren Bucus.
Oh, that's on my list for next week.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I'm reading a bunch of other stuff for school, which there'd be too many things to name. And I know I'm reading something else, and it disappeared. And so I've forgotten what I was reading.
No, that's
Oh, bad. The Best of Tailbones. I'm still reading Best of Tailbones, about halfway through that. Should hopefully be done with that soon. And I'm sure I'm going to be reading like 9 out of the things. But that's basically what I'm reading. So, and yeah. not really writing anything new at the moment because I've got to finish my master's thesis.
Yeah, you do.
I got about 15 pages to put into that, so.
That's your future. Get it done.
It'll get done. Shut.
All right. All right, everybody. So first, forward to our question of the week on Monday.
Yes, yes, we will have a new question.
What our question is, but there will be one. And what else?
That's basically it.
All right, everybody.
I mean, if you want to look at the new addition to the Viking Amoebas, I mean, we added a Katarina Sedilla to the list, so.
And she looks like an operatic Viking.
Yes.
I like it very much.
Yep. It's very fun. So cool. So, and if you want to send us a message or anything like that, you want to let us know your opinion, you want to scream at us, especially since we just talked about politics. You can obviously do that in a number of ways, which includes email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
Blog.
SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
Or our Twitter.
Twitter.com/SkiffyandFanty.
Yep. And your hate mail is always appreciated. So.
Very much so. I love hate mail.
Cool. Well, we will see you all next week with news and generally discussion-y bits. And so, yeah. So have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your February. And we will see you later.
Toodles.
Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
Heart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.